And that's why I'm here today, to humbly ask for your support to be Montana's next United States Senator.
Congressman Steve Daines surprises no one with his announcement today. He's running for the U.S. Senate. Good evening. I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck. And Capitol reporter Dan Boyce has our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition.
Steve Daines is running for the U.S. Senate. The first-term congressman made official months of speculation today in Bozeman that he will seek the Senate seat being vacated by Senator Max Baucus in 2014. Capitol reporter Dan Boyce tells us the race may be key to determining the political balance of the Senate.
Montanans fundamentally understand that our federal government is too big, it is too powerful, it spends too much, and it interferes too often with our daily lives.
Congressman Steve Daines has been in office for less than a year. But you would never know it from the hundreds of supporters gathering for the Senate bid announcement in his hometown of Bozeman. Daines has long been seen as the strongest Republican candidate for the seat, and it's been widely expected he would switch races once former Democratic Governor Brian Schweitzer said this summer he would not be running. Daines worked as an executive with successful Montana software company Right Now Technologies before running for Congress in 2012. He says his nearly 30 years in the private sector taught him what it takes to create jobs. He says he will fight to increase production of Montana natural resources like coal and timber to secure approval of the Keystone XL oil pipeline.
And let me tell you this. I have been steadfast in the fight to repeal Obamacare. Oh.
Which is something Daines thinks is still possible.
It can be repealed through having the votes in the United States Senate and the White House.
The small majority Democrats now enjoy in the Senate will be put to the test in 2014. Daines makes it clear he believes Montana's race will be important in deciding that balance.
The American people fired Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House in 2010. It's time we do the same thing to Harry Reid in 2014.
Daines may face a primary challenge from Missoula Republican State Representative Champ Edmonds, who implies he may give voters a more conservative choice than Daines. Democrats in the race right now include political unknown Will Sell area rancher Dirk Adams, and as of Tuesday night this week, former Lieutenant Governor John Bollinger. The Democratic frontrunner in the race, current Lieutenant Governor John Walsh, is already attacking Daines for being part of the conservative wing of Republican House members responsible for the recent federal government shutdown. Here's sound from a YouTube video released by the Walsh campaign.
Washington is broken, and Congressman Daines and his political agenda helped break it.
Daines did vote to defund the Affordable Care Act and supported other steps which led to the shutdown. But he also broke with the majority of his Republican colleagues in voting to reopen the government. There's a conflict in the national GOP right now between moderates and Tea Party Republicans. Congressman Daines does not want to be pegged to either side.
I'm just not a big fan of labels in politics. I think it is something that that opponents try to do to put people in boxes. But at the end of the day, when you go back to Washington, you represent a million Montanans. And that's what I strive to do every day.
Whatever happens, Daines will only be serving as Montana's lone congressman for another 14 months. Afterward, he will either be heading to the U.S. Senate or he'll be heading home. I'm Dan Boyce reporting in Bozeman.
Check out this story on our website to hear Daines' full Senate bid announcement speech, as well as Dan's one-on-one interview with the congressman following the speech. It's all at mtpr.org.
And in other news from around the state, Missoula Mayor John Engen easily won re-election yesterday, opening the door to his third four-year term. Engen received 66% of the vote. His closest challenger, Peggy Kane, received just over 16%. He says he'd like to think a number of factors played a role in that decisive victory.
I hope that my work over the last 8 years, I hope that the messages we delivered on the campaign, I hope the way the city is operating all contributed to that. That's the assumption I'm going to make anyway. You know, I've got a whole bunch of folks supporting me and trying to do a great job for our city, and with any luck, that has all paid off.
Engen says the city's potential acquisition of Mountain Water Company from the Carlisle Group is at the top of his priorities list.
If I'm reading the tea leaves correctly, yesterday's election was to a certain degree, a referendum on that question. I made it pretty clear that I'm interested in making that happen, and the candidates who were elected for council made it pretty clear that they were interested in the acquisition of the water company. So I think Missoulians, by and large, are going to support that effort.
He adds his long-term agenda doesn't end with the water company issue.
As you know, we're going to continue to work with the Missoula Economic Partnership on our jobs, employment, quality of life stuff. We're going to work with citizens continuing to improve our parks and our recreational opportunities. And then, you know, I tend to dwell on this a little bit, but the nuts and bolts of the daily operations of the city are a big deal, and folks have expectations that on a day like this, we're pushing some snow around and making sure that the potholes are getting filled, and that's the daily work of the mayor, is making sure that when the phone rings and folks need a fire engine or a police officer, we're there to deliver, and that's a part of the daily work of running a government.
Challengers Dean McCollum and Michael Hyde pulled in 7% and 6% of the vote, respectively.
State and Flathead County officials are asking for help in solving the February disappearance of a Kalispell woman whose vehicle was found abandoned near Poplar in February. Nicole Waller left Fairview on February 14th to return home to her three children in Kalispell and hasn't been seen since. Her maroon Ford Expedition was found on the side of U.S. Highway 2. Officials with the State Division of Criminal Investigation say a number of factors point to foul play. Agent Mark Hilliard says an observation that might not seem important can break a case open. Anyone with information is asked to call DCI at 406-791-2709 or the Flathead County Sheriff's Office at 406-758-5600. Waller is described as 5 feet tall and about 165 pounds with brown hair and hazel eyes.
A district court judge has rejected a Montana State prison inmate's arguments that he deserves a new trial for a 2002 rape in a juvenile detention center he says didn't happen. Lee Newspapers of Montana reports District Judge Douglas Harkin found that Cody Marble of Missoula failed to present evidence that established his innocence. Marble, with the help of the Montana Innocence Project, obtained a signed recantation in 2010 from the man he was convicted of raping. But 18 months later, the man reneged on his recantation. Harkin said the circumstances of the signed recantation made it of, quote, minimal value, end quote, and said it could not overcome the weight of the evidence presented at Marble's trial. Marble was 17 when he was convicted of raping a 13-year-old boy.
Well-known conservationist Brock Evans is in Montana this week to speak tonight at the Hamilton Community Center. Evans is a past lobbyist for the Sierra Club and current president of the National Endangered Species Coalition. He has been fighting for environmental issues for over 50 years and says he remains optimistic about the environmental movement.
And what I say to people is, if you don't believe me, pull out a map sometime. Pull any kind of a map, a highway map, and look for the green areas on the map with boundaries around them. I don't mean national forests, but I mean wilderness areas and parks and state parks and national parks and wildlife refuges. There's a couple hundred million acres there now that were not there 40 years ago. And they're protected. They're protected because our country has enforceable laws.
Evans will speak about past and present land use challenges in the Bitterroot Valley tonight at 7:30 at the Hamilton Community Center. We'll have a feature interview with Brock Evans tomorrow during Montana Evening Edition.
At least two counties in Montana are reporting lab-confirmed cases of influenza, signaling the start of flu season. The Gallatin City County Health Department says its cases were confirmed in two adolescent boys, while the Flathead County Health Department also confirmed two cases today. Health officials are encouraging residents to get flu shots to protect themselves and others who might be vulnerable to the virus. Flu symptoms include fever and chills, cough, sore throat, headaches, muscle aches, runny or stuffy nose, and fatigue. State health officials say there were more than 10,500 laboratory-confirmed or suspected cases of flu during the 2012-13 influenza season. 361 people were hospitalized, and the deaths of 15 people were directly attributed to the flu.
Almost all women use some form of feminine care product, from tampons to sprays, but how toxic are these products? Surprisingly, according to the Missoula-based Women's Voices for the Earth, there have been few studies of their toxicity until now. The group has just released their report titled Chem Fatale, of the potential health effects of toxic chemicals in feminine care products. The report found that few of these products have been tested for their safety and that many contain some level of toxic chemicals. In this feature interview, News Director Sally Mock talks with Alexandra Scranton, the Director of Science and Research for Women's Voices for the Earth, about the study. Be aware, this is a frank discussion of feminine care products.
Women's Voices for the Earth has been working on getting toxic chemicals out of household products that we're exposed to every day. We've worked on cosmetics and makeup. We've looked at cleaning products. And the decision to go into feminine care products came for several reasons. One, these are products that are marketed exclusively to women and used exclusively by women. So there's a disproportionate impact there. Secondly, we're seeing a lot of the same chemicals that we're worried about in other cosmetics are in these products as well. And third, they're used on such a sensitive and absorptive part of our body that we're really concerned about that route of exposure to the chemicals that we found in these products. And then fourth is sort of what you mentioned, you know, no one's really talking about this issue. And we don't think that these products are getting the oversight that they need to make sure that they're safe for women's health.
And by products, you're not just talking about tampons and pads.
That's right. The feminine care products kind of universe that we're talking about in the report, it includes tampons and pads, but also products like douche, feminine sprays and other deodorants, feminine wash, anti-itch creams, that sort of all of those products that women use.
And this is a $3 billion industry, your report says.
Yes, it is. It has been very much created, possibly creating, you know, solving problems that women didn't know they had. You know, and it is a big industry for sure.
One of the startling things in the study is pointing out that many, if not most, of these products are not, quote, medically necessary. They're really cosmetic in terms of what they do.
Exactly. There's no, certainly no, you know, medical authorities saying, you know, this is how you need to clean this area of your body, or that you even need to clean this area of your body with some sort of external product. So they've kind of, you know, fabricated or created this potential problem that women think they have about this sort of messy area of their body that needs to be cleaned, and really there's no medical need to have these products.
But unlikely, Alex, that women would stop using tampons and pads.
That's right. Exactly. That is certainly, you know, there is a need every month to take care of that. So, but you know, we've looked at various alternatives there too. But we're very concerned because women aren't going to give up their tampons and pads, and we want to make sure that those products are certainly safe to use.
The study found that there are various toxic chemicals, some of them carcinogenic, in these products, but at low levels. But the point of the study is that even at these low levels, it could be dangerous because of where these products are used. And a part of the body that you mentioned is very sensitive and very absorbent.
Exactly. There have been studies looking at tampons, for example. They found very low levels of dioxins and furans, which are extremely toxic chemicals that come from the fact that these products are chlorine bleached or have been. And they say, you get levels higher than that from your food. So you're already getting exposure to these chemicals in different ways. This is, you know, a negligible impact. But, of course, you know, tampons are inserted in your body. They're in there for hours at a time. It's a really unique route of exposure. And there's very little research on the impact of toxic chemicals on this tissue of your body and what those particularly cancer-causing chemicals might be doing. And we think that needs much greater scrutiny to assure the safety of these products.
Another startling point in the study is that these products, if they're regulated at all, they're regulated as either cosmetics or medical devices. And that, in your opinion, is quite inadequate.
It can be very confusing figuring out how these things are regulated. The sort of douche, feminine sprays, washes, those are regulated generally as cosmetics. Some of the anti-itch creams are regulated as over-the-counter drugs, and then tampons and pads, oddly enough, are regulated as medical devices. And one of the problems with that is that medical devices aren't required to disclose their ingredients, similar to the way that cosmetics are required to disclose ingredients. So we don't know what they're using in these tampons and pads. So fragrance tampons, for example, are a real concern because we don't know what chemicals are being added to these products that we use. There have been a number of studies showing various allergic rashes coming from the use of menstrual pads. Well, we don't know what additives are being added, what kind of adhesives, what kind of other chemicals are in there that people might be reacting to. And we think the disclosure of those ingredients is a very important thing.
There is a bill in Congress called the Safe Cosmetics and Personal Care Products Act that I assume would go a long way towards changing that.
Yeah, we definitely support this bill. What it would do is it would give, for one, the Food and Drug Administration greater authority to improve regulation and to improve their oversight of cosmetics. They do have cosmetics in their jurisdiction now. They don't have a lot of resources for it, nor is there a lot of political will to work on it, and this bill would give them more resources to be able to do that. It would also require some safety testing on ingredients that are used in cosmetic products and work towards the phasing out of ingredients that are linked to cancer, that are linked to birth defects, and linked to developmental harm. We think chemicals like that have no place in these products.
Besides the legislation, what in the meantime would your advice to women be about these products?
It's a difficult situation because it's hard to find safe products. Some of the alternatives you can use are, you know, think carefully about your use of feminine care products and see if you can reduce your use. You can maybe eliminate use of some of these products that are really unnecessary to keeping you healthy. We certainly recommend using unscented products where they're available, particularly tampons and pads.
And that's because the fragrance could be more toxic.
We just simply don't. The fragrance ingredients aren't disclosed. And we know from kind of master list of the kind of chemicals that get used in fragrance, there are some carcinogens that might be in fragrance. There are developmental toxins that can be used in fragrance. Certainly loads of different allergens that can cause skin reactions. But you just don't know what's in any particular fragrance product that you use. So looking for unscented is certainly a way to avoid exposure to a number of different chemicals. There are some chlorine-free bleached or unbleached tampons and pads, and you can look for those. And you can also try sort of the, you know, reusable sort of cloth washable pads that can help you avoid some of the exposure as well.
And don't be embarrassed to talk about it. I mean, this is obviously your health, and we need to be able to speak about it.
That's right, exactly. You know, it's a topic that no one wants to talk about. It's, you know, uncomfortable to talk about in polite company, but we do think this needs to be talked about because, you know, the health impacts are real. We need to be solving these problems, and we need to talk about it. So we certainly encourage people to talk with their health care providers about their use of these products and how they may be affecting your health.
We have been speaking with Alexandra Scranton, who is Director of Science and Research for the organization Women's Voices for the Earth. And Women's Voices for the Earth has just come out with a study called Kim Fatale, Potential Health Effects of Toxic Chemicals in Feminine Care Products. Alex, thanks very much. Very informative.
Oh, thanks so much, Allie.
For more information about the study of the safety of feminine care products, go to the website womensvoices.org.
And now for tonight's forecast. West of the Divide tonight, there is a winter weather advisory in effect from 11 a.m. Thursday to 11 a.m. Friday for West Glacier Region, Lower Clark Fork Region, and Bitterroot Sapphire Mountains. Tonight, expect mostly cloudy with a slight chance of light freezing rain and isolated snow. Lows should be in the mid-20s to lower 30s. Tomorrow, expect rain showers and a chance of snow with highs in the 40s to lower 50s. Central Montana tonight, there is a high wind watch in effect from Thursday evening through Friday afternoon for the Rocky Mountain Front. Tonight should be partly cloudy with lows 20 to 25 degrees. Tomorrow should be mostly cloudy as well, with a slight chance of snow through the day. And highs 40 to 50 degrees. Southwest Montana, tonight expect mostly cloudy skies, a slight chance of snow, and lows 25 to 30 degrees. Tomorrow should be mostly cloudy with a chance of snow in the morning and a chance of rain and snow in the afternoon. Highs should be 40 to 50 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Mark Hansen.
We reap a bountiful harvest. Many Montana kitchens fill with aromas of applesauce simmering on stovetops, and later pumpkin pies and Thanksgiving turkeys. We stock pantry shelves with garden bounty. If nothing else, we sit down tonight to dinner and have the luxury of not thinking about hunger until the morning. Most of us, that is. Last Friday, however, the 131,000 Montanans who depend for some of their food on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, formerly called food stamps, saw the amount of money available to them dwindle as increases from the 2009 Government Stimulus Act expired. Program benefits averaged just $1.40 per meal. In Montana alone, the cuts adversely affect 55,000 children, 5,700 veterans, and 24,000 of the elderly and disabled. $13 million have been taken from the Montana economy. Adding insult to injury, the U.S. House of Representatives passed a bill that would cut an additional $40 billion over 10 years from the $78 billion program, effectively ending the benefit for 4 million Americans and kicking them into poverty. The bill's so-called reform measures include allowing states to condition benefits on applicants passing drug tests and requiring able-bodied beneficiaries to work at least 20 hours per week. How could this bill be at all justifiable? Consider how Montana Representative Steve Daines defended his vote for this cut. His justification relies heavily on how he frames the issue. First, he uses statistics to appeal to a general dislike of growing government programs. He notes that SNAP has grown 150% since 2006 and asserts that his cut would be only 5% of that amount. Then he frames this seemingly small cut as a means to correct other things that people dislike in government programs, namely fraud and abuse. Finally, to make sure he doesn't look unsympathetic, he asserts that the truly needy won't see their benefits cut. So, that doesn't sound too bad. Who could be against cutting fraud, reducing government spending, while still helping the needy? Daines' defense is a classic example of framing an indefensible policy in terms of politically appealing values. But the moral picture looks quite different when we consider additional facts. The Congressional Budget Office estimates the House bill would deny SNAP benefits to approximately 3.8 million low-income people in 2014 and to an average of nearly 3 million people each year over the coming decade. Those who would be denied benefits include some of our country's poorest adults, many low-income children, seniors, and families that work for low wages. The reason for the growth in SNAP is the Great Recession, which resulted in 15% of Americans living in poverty, with one in four children now in households that receive SNAP benefits. Studies show that adequate nutrition for children improves their health and makes it less likely that they will need public assistance when they grow up. Furthermore, economists estimate that every dollar received from the program results in $1.70 in economic activity, thereby saving jobs. Now the House bill doesn't look so good. But perhaps someone might argue that despite the program's benefits, feeding the hungry should be a matter of charity rather than an obligation of government. So do we have a moral obligation to feed the hungry with programs like SNAP? Sad that we're even forced to ask such a question. Nevertheless, to those who would say that people should rely only on food banks or simply pull themselves up by their own bootstraps, I would argue that a just society is one that promotes equality of opportunity. And that's a matter of justice, not charity. Justice requires creating the conditions under which people can thrive on equal footing. That means adequate levels of security and public health, as well as access to education, healthcare, housing, and food. Most of us are vulnerable to needing assistance with these basic human needs quite unexpectedly and undeservedly. Lose your job at no fault of your own, and you will join up to 80% of Americans who at one time or another will be in poverty, unemployed, or near the poverty line. Social welfare professor Mark Rank's research indicates that poverty is usually the result of failures at economic and political levels rather than of individual faults. Poverty is an issue of us, he concludes, rather than an issue of them. That means it's ultimately about the kind of people we are. We should be people who respect human dignity and justice. We should be an America where people don't have to go hungry or go without education or health care, where the wealthiest citizens and corporations aren't given tax cuts at the expense of the poor, but willingly pay higher taxes to fulfill their obligations. And we should be a community where the bountiful harvest is celebrated by all. This is Mark Hansen, guest commentator for the Mansfield Program in Ethics and Public Affairs at the University of Montana.
Mark Hansen is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Connor Ballantyne.
And I'm Madeline Beck. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.